from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspik. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes, Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. And of course, and I keep saying this, I'm going to have to adjust that intro. For now, I think we are going to 3 days a week on this show while MLB is not being played and there's no activity around the game. Of course, when things get back up and running again, this is going to be every single day, Monday through Friday. But for now, due to multiple factors, it's going to be 3 days a week. And I think we're going to aim for Tuesday, Thursday, Friday moving forward. And you may have noticed, or you may not have noticed, that the network is kind of coming together and we are unifying in a way that we are going to have themed content for the next several weeks. And I think it's a fun way for us to unify and kind of have a consistent message across the network. And it's also really interesting because we're going to get to talk about a number of compelling topics. So for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be focusing on the best seasons in franchise history. And so, you know, it's up to me if it is one season or multiple seasons. But for now and for today and actually for the rest of this week, I do want to talk about the 2010 San Francisco Giants. So it's been a decade, of course. Today, this is the 10-year anniversary of that team. And there's so much to get into, and we have a lot of interesting content planned to talk about that 2010 team. I want to talk about the transition, like how they grew into that group that they were in 2010. So kind of looking back a little bit at the 07, 08, and 09 seasons to see how did this develop. I want to talk about some of the best games from that season. There were a number of really great games. And then, of course, we'll get to talk about the postseason in 2010. And we have some fun ideas planned for that as well, but it'll be great to revisit that series against the Braves and then even greater to talk about the NLCS against Philadelphia and, of course, the World Series against the Texas Rangers. So it's going to be a lot of fun talking about that 2010 season. It's going to come to life again. I remember it like it was yesterday, but it was 10 years ago. But for today's show, I just kind of want to summarize the 2010 season, and then I think we'll go into more detail. But just to summarize, I do want to point out that in 2010, the Giants went 92-70. They won the National League West by 2 games. So they were tied with the Padres, who were playing the Giants in San Francisco for the last series of the year. Giants just had to win one of those 3 games, and they lost the first 2. And so the Padres had a chance to tie for the National League West on the last day of the season. The Giants had a chance to win the division with a win, and they did. It was a Jonathan Sanchez start. He hit a triple in that game. Buster Posey hit a late home run. Brian Wilson shut the door, and the Giants won the division, making the postseason for the first time in a long time. They also had a plus 114 run differential that year, which was the second best in the National League behind only the Philadelphia Phillies. So they were like really underrated going into the postseason. Most pundits considered the Giants a weaker team and a team that they picked against. Like when the Giants played the Braves that year, Braves went 91-71. Giants had a better record and the Giants had a better run differential, and yet people picked against the Giants. And then the Phillies were like the powerhouse of the league and probably of all of baseball. So that makes sense. But then against the Rangers, the Giants also had a better record, but I get it, different league. So it's they're not playing the same people. But the Rangers had a plus 100 run differential to the Giants' 114. Maybe you remember, people considered the Giants were like a weak hitting team and they wouldn't have a chance against these powerful offenses from some other teams. But if you look back at like park adjusted numbers and even some numbers, pure numbers like just home run totals, you will see, and we'll get to this when we talk about the World Series, that the Giants should not have been considered underdogs by any stretch in that series. Yet they were, and of course they dominated in that World Series. But I want to talk about what was behind the 92-70 record? How did the Giants finish 22 games over 500 in 2010? Well, first of all, looking at the hitting, which maybe we should actually start with the pitching, because I think we all know that's where it's going to get really outstanding. But something that is perpetually underrated about those championship-winning Giants teams is their offense. They actually had a very good offensive team in those years. And so if we look at Fangraphs and we take pitchers out of the equation, which we ought to do when we're talking about a team's offense, you can't just say this was their team on base percentage or batting average or whatever. You're counting pitchers in that equation. It's totally skewing the data, especially if you're comparing them to an American League team, which does not have pitchers in its lineup. So when you take pitchers out of the equation, and let's go with something like weighted runs created plus, which is also adjusting for the ballpark, the Giants had the seventh best offensive team in baseball. But keep in mind, American League teams not only don't have a pitcher, but they do have a designated hitter. So it's not totally fair to even do this and compare them to American League teams. In the National League, only the Reds, Brewers, and Phillies had better non-pitcher park-adjusted offenses than the San Francisco Giants. And they were just 1% worse than the Phillies, 2% worse than the Brewers, and 6% worse than the Cincinnati Reds. Now, by wins above replacement, the Giants' offense, which includes defense, I know that's a little confusing, but non-pitchers, how did they contribute in terms of wins above replacement? They were sixth best in all of baseball and trailed only the Reds and Brewers in the National League. So this is a very underrated offense. I mean, people considered them like a bad offensive team in some respects, but they were, you know, the 106 weighted runs created plus means they were 6% better than league average. So specifically looking at, okay, like those are a bunch of numbers, but who did that? Like which players for them were carrying them to such strong offensive numbers? And this is like some insider knowledge. I bet a lot of people know this, but a lot of people don't. The Giants leader in Fangraphs wins above replacement in 2010. Who do you think it was? Well, it was Andrés Torres. I don't know that how many people actually know that. And it wasn't that close. Second was Aubrey Huff, and it actually kind of was close. Torres, according to Fangraphs, 6.3 wins above replacement. Just a phenomenal season. Offensively, 25% above average. Tremendous defense and base running from Andrés Torres. He totally carried that 2010 team out of nowhere in center field. Just out of nowhere, had a monster season. And the same can be said of Aubrey Huff. I mean, this was year one of a one-year, $3 million deal, I think. So, you know, they bring him in, and what does he do? He has a 144 weighted runs created plus, meaning 44% above average offense. He played 157 games, batted 668 times, 26 home runs, scored 100 runs. Say what you want about Aubrey Huff, but in 2010, they don't win it without him. And so that's just the facts. Like he was a difference maker in 2010. And if he didn't have that kind of a season, which he has since admitted was fueled by amphetamines, and he was taking, I think, Adderall, which is a attention deficit drug that if you don't have ADD, it kind of functions as a strong upper, let's just say. He says he was taking that, even though he doesn't have ADD, during that season, and that he wouldn't have had that type of year had he not been taking those drugs. And so that's a really interesting thing that doesn't really get talked about either. So anyway, coming up in the second half of the show, we'll talk more about the players behind this. This was Buster Posey's major league kind of first season in the majors. Talk about Pat Burrell, Juan Uribe, Freddie Sanchez, so many others, and then the pitching staff as well. And then we'll continue this conversation for the rest of the week. So that's all coming up next. But first, from an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beer while you watch the game, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast. And that's where Postmates comes in. I personally have used Postmates several times, including in desperate times when I like needed Tylenol and I was having a terrible headache. Didn't have any in the house, pulled up Postmates, used their promo code for free delivery, and I had the medication I needed within like 25 minutes. It was an absolute miracle given the condition I was in. also used it for groceries, which is key in this time right now when we're all sheltering in place. Postmates is still available. Definitely appreciative of those working with Postmates during this difficult time. But the app is easy to use and the process is seamless and it's highly recommended. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food and that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. But Postmates doesn't deliver just burgers and sushi. They actually make life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery too. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. So, no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore. Just download Postmates for iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right, as promised here in the second half of the show, just going to continue to talk about who these characters were on the 2010 Giants. So just to round out who we're talking about here, I don't know if I said, Aubrey Huff had a 5.7 Fangraphs wins above replacement season, which is just a monster, borderline MVP type of year. Buster Posey's first season in the majors, he had debuted in 2009, but his first kind of, it wasn't even a full year. He played just 108 games, won the Rookie of the Year, was 34% above average offensively and a good defensive catcher. Just a phenomenal year. Pat Burrell came over in the middle of the season and had a very strong offensive year for the Giants. Juan Uribe, good offensive player, like solid bat and good defense, similar to Freddie Sanchez in that regard. Solid bat, good defense that year. And there were many other characters as well, including Cody Ross, who played 33 games down the stretch for the Giants and then, of course, into the postseason and was 26% above average in those 33 games. But I do want to talk about the pitching staff because this is what everybody is going to remember when they think about the 2010 Giants. So comparing them to the rest of the league, shocking. You know who actually, what team was second in Fangraphs WAR for pitching? Was the Colorado Rockies. White Sox were number one, second was the Rockies, third was the Rangers. So talk about underrated pitching. I'm not sure I knew that when we were going to talk about the Rangers in the World Series against the Giants. I was going to say, okay, the Giants offense actually stacked up well against the Rangers, but the Giants pitching was clearly better. But actually this kind of is telling me here that these two teams were pretty evenly matched. I mean, number three was the Rangers, number four here is the Giants. And so they actually were similar offensively, even though people thought the Rangers were far superior offensively. And they were similar from a pitching perspective, even though I think people probably thought the Giants pitching was better. So that's interesting. But there the Giants are, number two in the National League in pitching by Fangraphs wins above replacement. So this will tell you something interesting. The Rockies, they had a 4.14 ERA. The Giants had a 3.36. So you might be wondering, how on earth is a 4.14 team ERA better than a 3.36? Well, it's park adjusted. It's considering the fact that the Rockies played in Denver half the time and the Giants played in San Francisco half the time, total opposite ends of the spectrum. And with that adjustment, what the Rockies did was more impressive, apparently. So digging deeper, looking at starting pitching, Giants actually were not that high on this list. That's actually shocking. They were 13th in Fangraphs WAR in all of baseball, and in the National League, they were 6th, which is good, but I would have actually expected them to be number one here. By earned run average, they were number two. So they had some higher peripherals there, and I think that's possibly an effect of the ballpark. And the Giants relievers were second in the National League in Fangraphs WAR, which is not a great way to evaluate relievers, but over the larger sample of a whole season of all your relievers, it's a decent way to look at it. And the Padres were number one. And that's something I do remember about that 2010 Padres team, is that their pitching was one of the only pitching staffs, it seemed, in the National League that could go toe-to-toe with the Giants, and they did. I mean, they pretty clearly had a better bullpen than the Giants, which obviously the Giants had a great bullpen in that 2010 season. So looking at who led the charge in 2010 from the pitching staff, number one guy on this list is Tim Lincecum, even though it was a quote-unquote down year from him after his two Cy Young Awards in 2008 and 2009. Lincecum had a 3.43 earned run average, peripherals that were much better, 3.15 fielding independent pitching, 3.09 expected fielding independent pitching. So just another extremely strong season for Lincecum, who threw 212 and a third innings and was worth, according to Fangraphs, 4.3 wins above replacement. Number two was Matt Cain, who was just establishing himself as just this steady force on the mound. He had a 3.14 ERA, which was significantly better than Lincecum's, but the peripherals were higher, and that's being factored in to WAR here. Across 223 and a third innings, a 3.14 earned run average, I think that's worth more than four wins above replacement. If you count actual results instead of expected results, that's going to be higher. So a phenomenal impact season from Matt Cain there in 2010. Brian Wilson, the third most valuable pitcher on the Giants in 2010, even though he threw only 74 innings compared to other guys below him who threw about 200. So Wilson was just an elite reliever in 2010, had a 1.81 earned run average, peripherals in the low to mid twos, excellent strikeout rate, excellent home run rate, and 74 innings for a reliever is a lot. 74 and two thirds. I don't want to sell him short. Jonathan Sanchez had a pretty strong season, as did Barry Zito. Actually, more or less league average seasons from Sanchez and Zito. The numbers look good now, but I mean, Sanchez, he had a 3.07 ERA. What am I saying? The peripherals were higher, and that's dragging down the wins above replacement. Peripherals were up around four, but he was a run better than that by actual results. Not that I would have expected that to be sustainable, but in terms of what actually happened, that was an impact season from Sanchez. Barry Zito had roughly a league average season, and Madison Bumgarner, kind of his debut there in 2010, and he had a 3.00 ERA with peripherals that were a little higher. So anyway, the pitching staff, Lincecum, Cain, Wilson, Sanchez, Zito, Bumgarner, Romo, Casilla, like they all, and Javier Lopez, who was acquired mid-season, they all had really strong years, and coupled with that really good offense and defense, propelled the Giants to that 92 and 70 record. So anyway, coming up on Thursday, we'll probably just talk about how some of the players came to be on the roster, like Pat Burrell and Cody Ross, how they formed, and then some of those games, and then introduce the postseason, and then we'll go into great detail about some of those games in the postseason, and we even may talk to some special guests about those postseason games. So remember, to get this show 3 days a week for now, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. Once again, my name is Ben Kaspic. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Kaspic. That's K-A-S-P-I-C-K. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Giants. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On MLB. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.